You are listening to episode number 72 of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. If you've been around my corner of the internet for even just a little bit, then you most likely know how much I absolutely hate reviewing. It doesn't matter if it's for the AP bio exam, or if it's just for a unit test, or if it's for the state standardized end of course exam that we have where I live. No matter what it is, I just truly dread review days. They are not my favorite whatsoever. So I have spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make them as pain-free as possible for me while still being helpful for my students, because I do know the importance of review. And I know that reviewing is a part of this job and a part of me serving my students and helping them be set up for success, especially for those higher stakes exams like AP exams, like EOC and other benchmark tests. And so today I'm going to share with you four tips that I have gathered over the years for how to best review for those end of year tests and exams. Specifically, if you have some standardized ones, whether those are called benchmarks, EOCs, STAR exams, AP, you name it, these tips will apply. Ready to hear more? Let's dive in.
This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I am passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You are in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode.
Here is the first thing I want to tell you from my years of action research, trying to figure out how to make reviewing as pain-free as possible, because I truly dread it so much. I approach this differently when I've been on a team of teachers, like we're all teaching biology, or we're all teaching anatomy or something like that, versus when I've been a lone ranger and I'm like the only one teaching what I teach. Maybe you're the entire department if you're in a really tiny school. So my first two tips are going to apply if you are on a team. And then my last two are going to apply no matter what, whether you're on a team or doing your own thing, running the ship of your department. Okay. So first, if you have a team, please take advantage of it and divide and conquer the creation of review materials. Okay, so at my first teaching job, I was in a large public school. At different times, I was between being one of 4 to 6 biology teachers, because different semesters, we were on semester blocks, you had different classes, and sometimes more of us were teaching it, sometimes less. So let's just say on average, there were 5 of us teaching biology at once. And in my state, Biology 1 is an EOC course. It has an end of course exam to it that the state gives. And it really has a huge factor in terms of if students will pass Biology 1 or not. Our state has it for Algebra 1, English 1, Biology 1, and then US History. And from my conversations with y'all, it sounds like it's very similar in most states, that you have something like that. And it tends to be biology that's the kicker there. But I know other states, you know, you may call them benchmarks, whatever. Maybe you teach an AP class. So there's all sorts of different names. But when you're doing this, your review can be so long. Like, especially, I feel like when it's a standardized test, like an AP exam you're building up to, you're probably building in 1 to 2 weeks of review. That's a lot of days. And so if you have multiple people teaching your subject so that you're not just having to constantly churn out unique and creative and effective review materials, divide and conquer. This is what we did on my team of biology teachers at that first school as we were preparing for the Biology 1 exam. Yes, we all got our own scores for what our personal pass rate and our average were, but we also were looked at as a department. How did our school do on Biology 1, which reflected our department, our little sub-department of biology teachers? So we all want to do well. And so what we would do is we'd split it up and we would each take a core content area, a core unit or two, and we would create the review materials for that unit. So, you know, one teacher covered evolution, another covered ecology, someone did all genetics and heredity, another person did cells and like biochem. You know, we divided it that way so that it majorly lifted the burden. And then we just shared those resources with each other. Was it like, did everyone make things the way I do? No. The style is different and that kind of thing. But you can tell your students, like, okay, we're going to do this evolution review. Mr. E is the one who made it. You know, he shared this with us because it's his expertise. And I think one thing that we found really helpful with that is a lot of us explained things different ways. And so to have everyone contributing different content area and then we're all using the same stuff, it was really, really great for my students to see review materials on biochemistry that another teacher made so that they could see how it could be learned a different way. Or one of our teachers was a lot more technical. Another was a lot more creative. The creative teacher made smart board resources for us to use on our smart boards where we were dragging things and drawing. And it was very cool to really partner with my team and divide the work up that way. Because over, you know, 10 review days, when there's five of us, we're each only having to come up with 2 days worth of review materials. It really helped with that burden. So if you teach on a team, I recommend dividing and conquering the creation of the review materials. The second thing I want to encourage you to do, if you are on a team, is if you're able to swing it, let students rotate between different classrooms. Okay, so this doesn't always work, but we had a couple of class periods where, like, first period, four of us were teaching biology one at the same time. You know, second period, we might only have two of us teaching it because we all had other preps too. But what we would do is, let's say that first period, we would take different days where we take different groups. So not only was I responsible, you know, for all of the heredity review materials, then I was the one who taught it to everyone's students. They rotated into my classroom. Mine went to other classrooms. And this was so, so good, y'all. I think it was so great for them to not only see different review materials made by other teachers, but to hear from different teachers on different content area. I can't express how much it was so funny how, like, I would have students in my class that I would explain something the way I've always explained it. You know, I've said it this way 500 times to my students, but their teacher never said it that way. And they heard it and they're like, it finally makes sense. And vice versa. That was happening with my students in other people's classrooms. So I really encourage you, if that's possible and you can do that, I recommend it. Now, worst case scenario, if that's not possible, just schedule wise, logistic wise, another thing we did was the 2 weeks before the EOC, 4 days a week, so Monday through Thursday, because no one wanted to do Fridays, one of us would, like, stay after every day and we were in charge of review for that day. So it was like for 2 weeks, basically every day after school for 1 hour, one of us was running a review session. And you only had to run one or two of them, depending on how many of us were teaching biology at that time. And it was great because your students were getting so much extra support and they're, again, having an opportunity to learn from another teacher. So even if you can't make that work in the classroom, using that outside space is great. And then you're not running review sessions every single day, you know, for 2 weeks. You're only having to show up one or two of those times and you know your coworkers are covering it the other times. So I definitely recommend doing that as well if you're able to swing it. Now, I know some of you are listening and you're like, I wish I was on a team. Like, I remember teaching AP Biology and I so wish I wasn't the only one teaching it. Like, is anyone else teaching AP Bio? It would have been so nice to be able to partner with someone in my building on that content and on those review materials. But again, I know that's not always possible. So my next two tips apply whether you're on a team or not. And the third tip I'm going to share is you need to do as many practice problems as possible. And ideally, practice problems that are written exactly like the test questions. Because here's the deal. You may be a better test writer than the creator of your state EOC exam. Okay, you may write better questions, but it doesn't matter because you're not writing the EOC exam. And I will tell you, this was hard for me. I took several courses in my master's program about how to write tests. So this is something I'm really passionate about, making really good, fair, well-written test questions. And so it was hard for me to see some of the released EOC practice problems from my state and be like, some of these questions are so bad. Like, they're not worded well. Like, they're inadvertently being tricky when they shouldn't be tricky. And you know what, though? It doesn't matter because my students need to learn how to take those kinds of tests and how to do those kinds of practice problems. So I recommend bringing in as many of those as you possibly can, especially if you teach AP. The way that AP and College Board writes the questions is so different from how I write my questions. I genuinely feel like they try to make it as hard as possible. I've said this, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, but I've said it on Instagram 1,000 times. I swear, y'all, the AP biology exam is a reading comprehension test. It's not like a biology content or even skills-based test. I really feel like if you are a really good reader, you can look at the data they provide and answer the questions. It really gives me like ACT science vibes, not do you actually know AP biology and understand it, energy? But that's a tangent I could go on another day. So I think it's so important, especially for something like that, that your students are seeing the way that questions are worded. They're seeing the way things are distracting. One thing I told all my AP biology students was, listen, they're just going to throw out like random information in the questions to try to throw you off. Like they're going to start sharing this data with you about some experiment, you know, about something that happened in the cell. And your initial reaction is going to be, oh my gosh, Mr. Winter never taught me this. But it doesn't matter, because rarely is the question about the actual content. It's about your ability to interpret the data they give you, or, you know, make a graph from this and analyze it. And so they throw in these distractors. So I really actually, with AP Biology, I wrote all of my unit tests from old test questions and FRQs. And my students did not do well on them because they're so hard. So I definitely had to curve those. But I think it really helped them, because I will say none of my students had a problem on the AP bio exam with time. They all did great with time because they were used to, I had basically taken the length of the AP bio exam and the number of questions and like done a little calculation and figured out how many multiple choice grid ins and FRQs they should be able to answer in my 50 minute class period for our test. And I narrowed it down to that. I think it was like between 20 and 25 multiple choice. It'd be 20 if I had any grid in questions, and then like anywhere from like 1 to 3 FRQs, depending on how long they are. Cause you know, some of them are like 9 to 10 pointers. Others are like 3 to 4 pointers. So I think giving them the literal types of problems they're going to see is so helpful, because they get used to the language. They get used to the organization. They get used to the weird way things are phrased. We can look at the problem and be like, okay, yeah, this doesn't make sense. There isn't one great answer, but let's choose the best answer from these 4 options. I saw that especially with our biology EOC. Again, like, didn't feel like it was really well written, but that's not the point. We got to teach the kids how to take the test. And I hate even saying that, because it leans to teach to the test, which I hate and I don't want to do. But we have to be real here. A lot of you have these standardized tests and they affect your job performance, you know, how your students do on these. So I get the pressure of that. And that's where I say, we need to expose them to how these things are worded so we can help them, you know, learn how to think through and problem solve through these different test questions. So that's my third tip. As many practice problems that you can that are written like the test questions they will see. You know, so this is where you can get a little crafty in terms of like finding and scavenging as big of a bank as possible of you as you can of old questions. So like AP is kind of nice because, you know, they'll release old FRQs, but then they also put out practice exams every year. So when they did the rewrite in maybe 2012 or something like that, I would always pull questions from the 2012 practice test on and at least use those. For EOC or your state test, see if they have practice exams that they release every year that you can compile from past years and use those. So try to get those and just create a bank on your computer that you use year after year for that. And then to do the practice problem so it doesn't get boring, especially if it's like a multiple choice based test, those get so boring. You're not just going to give them like 100 test questions to do. I recommend a couple of things. One, use whiteboards. If you don't have a class set of little mini whiteboards and markers and erasers, you need to get them. You can Amazon it right now. See these little sets they make. It's so nice. Your students will love being able to write on them. And then you can give them a countdown. You say 3, 2, 1, they show you their answer. And then you reveal the answer and they can keep track of how many points they have. It just feels way more fun to do it that way as opposed to doing it on paper. Another way you can do it is you can do teams versus on their own, you know. Break them up in partners into partners some days, groups of 3 or 4 other days, and then some days they're going to work on their own. If you don't have whiteboards, another thing you can do is you can just make simple pieces of paper and put A and B on one piece and then C and D on another, and then each kid has 2, and you'll have them just hold in the air their letter. And the nice thing about having cards like this, the A, B, C, D cards, is you can just go outside and then do review questions. Like you're going to read out a multiple choice question and they have to lift up their letter type thing. Another thing you can do with the letters is if you're in your classroom, put an A, a B, a C, and a D in each corner of your classroom, which this works best if you have a rectangular room, but give them each corner a letter, and then put a question up projected on your whiteboard, then have students physically move to the corner that they think is the correct answer. I love this because it gets them out of their seat, but allows you to do something without having to take them outside if that's something that's hard to do at your school. The only bummer is, of course, students will start just like, if you have a class of 30, they're just going to start like following who they deem is the smartest kid in the class. But if your questions are written tricky, like mine tend to be for my state, it still gives you some pretty good challenge level there because it's not always going to be a clear cut and dry right answer for them. So I love getting them out of their seats for that too. If you have multiple sections of your class, like you teach three different biology ones, having some sort of competition between your classes and keeping a tally on the board is a game changer. And there could be a lot of different ways that they could earn points. It could be something where it is like knowledge based and how the class does on some sort of practice test you get them. It could be something where they earn points based on behavior and how well they commit to review. It could be they get points for every time someone from their class goes to one of the afternoon review sessions. And you can have a really good reward for them. Like you're going to make them breakfast one day after the exam if you have them in the morning, or you're going to order in pizza for them one day if it's an afternoon class, or there's so many, make them little goodie bags. But I think making it a competition between classes, and you can do even like a game board where it's like you get 5 points if you all do this, 5 points for this. I think that can make it really fun and help jazz up review days that can be boring with a lot of practice problems. And then the last thing I'll say about the practice problems is for exams where you have FRQs, like on an AP exam, you know, that's a free response question or an open response question. They need to be doing these all year long. I have a couple AP bio teacher friends that do FRQ Fridays. So literally every Friday, they spend half of class doing one FRQ and then going over it basically. But I really recommend doing these all year. But no matter when you do it, whether it's all year, every Friday, or just at the end when you're reviewing, they need to see the rubrics for how these are graded. And I love like pull up on your projector, pull up the FRQ, pull up the rubric. If you have samples of like, okay, here's someone who answered this question and got 9 of the points. Here's someone who got 7. Here's someone who got 5. Let them see. I think it's so helpful for them to see legit feedback and what actually gets points and what doesn't. I think this is really helpful too, because like they need to label the sections. That's really helpful. I don't think it's required that they label sections on AP Bio, but if you don't label them and then something bleeds into the other part, the grader may not know what part you're answering. So just little things like that. I think if they can see them on AP, that's really important. I also think having them do FRQs anonymously and then like mixing them up around the class and then giving each student a rubric and having them grade each other. Or better yet, this is my favorite. If you have 2 sections of AP, give each class an FRQ and then swap them. So like period 2 grades period 4s, period 4 grades period 2s, and they give each other feedback. If they don't know who did whose, you can assign each student like a number. But I think that's really good because then they're not really looking at people's in the classrooms. It's harder to discern who did what, but it's just such a good way for them to see. I think they learn so much from seeing what other people are doing too. So like I said, first tip, divide and conquer if you're on a team. Second tip, even like rotate your students and let them learn from each teacher on your team if you're able. Third tip, do as many practice problems as possible, especially ones that mimic the way the test questions are going to be written. And then last but not least, if you don't have a team, or even if you do and you want to make this, I highly recommend making review stations. So I love using stations in my high school science classes. I think they help make review a lot more active. It makes it way more about them and way less about me. They get students out of their seats. It helps, again, it's more student-centric rather than teacher-centric. It's a fun opportunity too to get some one-on-one time with students, and I'll explain how I do that. And I also just think they're fun. And again, I just think it takes the pressure off of me being up front, like doing all of this review and almost like entertainment to keep them engaged during review days. I just think they're so exhausting. I'm feeling tired just thinking about review days. So I really recommend doing review stations. And so I'm going to kind of explain to you the way that I like to make review stations so that you can make some quickly for your students. And the nice thing about this is you can make these as long or as short as you want. You can make these short enough that they could do a whole set in one day, or you could stretch this out where it's going to take several days. Okay, so if I was going to tell you how to make review stations, here is how I would tell you to do it. First, review station number one should be some sort of make a cheat sheet station. So I would set up a giant sticky note, if you know what I'm talking about, like those big yellow pads that are like sticky on top, and like it's literally just like a giant post-it. I would set that up and set up some markers and then write a topic at the top of the sticky note, and then put a bunch of different topics like all around that wall that maybe you're on. Okay, so thinking about like my genetics unit, let's say I was going to do these review stations specifically on genetics. I would have 3 sticky notes, one that says DNA structure and replication, one that says protein synthesis, and one that says meiosis, because those are the 3 main concepts I cover in my genetics unit. at that station, students are going to treat each giant sticky note as like a cheat sheet. And what they're going to do is they're going to write down what do they think is the most important thing to know under each topic. And then at the end of class, what you can do is you can go up to these. It's like these massive cheat sheets that they've compiled as a class. They've each kind of put one or two things on it. You can go through and highlight with big markers and stuff. Okay, what are the most important things they wrote down? Maybe cross out or de-emphasize anything they added that's not that important. Correct anything that might be incorrect, and then add anything big that's missing. And then on the way out, students can take pictures of these to study from, or you can give them a whole nother day where they get to write all the information out to have it as their own, you know, study sheets. I love these because like literally you have to do barely any prep other than having those giant sticky notes, but it's so helpful for your students and it's something that they can kind of walk away with later and really study from. And if you don't want to buy those giant sticky notes because I know they can get expensive, you can just use your whiteboard and kind of like draw a grid on it and divide up your whiteboard that way. I just know you may not have that much whiteboard space. So the stickies are nice too, especially if you can send students out in the hall and then this entire review station can be in the hallway and you just let them walk down the hall and they add stuff. You know, let's say you're doing your entire first semester, you're going to review one day. You could literally have like 15 to 20 of these giant stickies out in the hall and have students from all your class periods contribute to them. And then the next day you get to look over them. So I just think it's a really great station. The second review station I always like to have is some sort of practice question station. So like I said, having these is so important. Don't reinvent the wheel. You can just pull up, literally what y'all can do is like pull up old quiz and test questions even and put them all on one sheet in like a different font. I swear they will not necessarily remember that they've seen those before. Or just go on Google. I feel like there's so many tests and answer keys and stuff online. Because again, you're not giving this as like an end of unit assessment. This is just for practice. And then of course, see if there's anything provided for you as review materials for your benchmark or standardized tests. Because again, those will make the best questions. But you can do that and you can have them record their answers on a piece of paper and then you can go over them at the end of class. You can have an answer key where they check their answers before they rotate. It's however you want to do that. But I want you to have a practice questions station. The third station I want you to have is some sort of vocabulary review station. And so I love to have one station that's entirely dedicated to this. And it, again, it's one that's like no prep. All you need to do is print out a list of key vocabulary terms for them. And then one other page that'll have like simple instructions. And so two different ways I like to do this. I like to either ask my students to make a concept map or ask them to make a flip chart. The concept map is a little bit more of an advanced option, especially if you have a lot of vocabulary words. But basically, students will take your list of terms and they're going to draw a concept map that shows what the words mean and how the terms are related to each other. And they have to make two versions. They got to make a blank one and then a filled in one that would serve as like an answer key. And then if they have extra time, they can swap these with a friend. Or you can collect all these and then use these review day number two as your practice. So they're going to do each other's. It's a great way too, if you're an NGSS school, to get them to practice developing and using models. So I love doing the concept maps. A less advanced option that's still very helpful is to do a flip chart. And so basically you'll take a piece of computer paper and you're going to fold it hamburger style, but make the edges kiss. Okay. So then once it's folded, it's going to look like you have two doors. And then they can cut tabs in the paper. So they take their scissors and cut from the edge to the crease and they can cut as many as they need on each side. And then on the outside of each flap, they write the term. And then if they open the flap underneath it, it would have the vocabulary term. Or excuse me, the definition. And I like this because it's really tactile and students leave your classroom literally with a helpful studying tool. And I also like it because it's way easier for them to keep up with than like a Ziploc bag of flashcards because it's all just on one piece. So I love to have that. So first review station, again, make a cheat sheet station with your giant post-it notes. Second will be a practice question station. Third is some sort of vocabulary review station. Fourth is my favorite, and this is the Ask the Teacher station. And I like to build this in, again, no prep whatsoever. You're not bringing anything to the table here, but you're just going to have a station where you're sitting with a group of students and you're just going to be with them and answer their questions. You can ask them what they want you to reteach on. Where are they falling short? You can, if you feel like your students are really shy, you can pull out old tests here and have them look at their test and like review the questions that they got wrong and go over them with them there. It just gives you some smaller group time that I think is really special to have that face-to-face time with them. And it's nice because you can do this because the other stations are so independent. Like your other students can be doing those other stations while you're in this group. And I really like that. And then last, if you have a bigger class, you might need a fifth station. just because you don't want to only divide them up into four. But having a visitation can be just some sort of review game. And this can be anything that you have. I really like to do like a taboo-inspired vocabulary review game. I have made these for all of my units in biology, anatomy, physical science, and the chemistry units that I've finished so far. As I'm finishing them, I'm writing those too. And these are nice because they can just pick up these sets of cards and they can play with each other. And if they can just play while they're, you know, waiting to rotate. And it's a nice little brain break from some of the other stations that are a little bit more hands-on. So those would be the five review stations that I love. And again, you could really spread this out over several days and make this a whole thing, but they don't really require that much prep, which is why I love them. And I love being able to throw them together last minute. Now, if you're like, how does this look practically on an actual class period day? Let's say you have a 50-minute class period. I would have my first 5 minutes be some sort of bell ringer, which, because you all know, I love a good prime time, which is what I call bell ringers, because I think they're the most important first 5 minutes of your class is so important. So I would do the bell ringer. Then I would follow that with just an overview of each station and what's expected of them. And then I would draw sticks and divide them into groups. So that's about another 5 minutes. And then I would send them off to each station, tell each group where to start, give them a number to start at, and then set a timer. So based on how long your class period is, if it's a 50-minute class period, they're only going to get 5 to 8 minutes per station. But you'll set some sort of timer. When it goes off, everyone rotates. So station one goes to two, two goes to three goes to four, etc. And then save yourself 10 to 15 minutes at the end of class to go over stations if you need to. But if you have extra time, go over them the next day and take your time with it. But I think this is my favorite, like, really practical way to review with students. I mean, of course, I love if you can do the team method. But again, I know that's not possible for everyone. So if you need help with a review, review stations to me are where it's at. And I think setting them up in this way is very pain-free. And so I encourage you to try it. And if you do, let me know. I cannot tell you how much it encourages me to hear from y'all in my DMs and my inbox when you listen to a podcast and you try it out. So let me know if you tried this out. I hope it's given you some ideas and equipped you as you prepare for your benchmark and your EOC and your AP exams this May and as the school year wraps up. And reach out to me if you have any follow-up questions or if you have another strategy you've used that's gone really well. I would love to hear about it and I can share those over on my Instagram stories for everyone who hangs around over there. As always, you can find today's show notes at isntrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode72. And cool thing, I don't know if you knew this, a few weeks ago, someone reached out to me and asked if I had transcripts for my podcast episodes for those that are hard of hearing. And at the time, I didn't. But since she asked, I now have that available. So I can't remember. I think it might be episode 66 on. There's a transcript now for every podcast episode. So if you go to the show notes, you can go there and there's kind of like a little drop down menu you click and the transcript will be there. It's very raw. It's just literally transcribing exactly what I say. And since, you know, I have my own little way of speaking, sometimes it doesn't translate me perfectly or put the perfect grammar in there. But hey, it's helpful and I hope that's a good resource for y'all. And if you are enjoying listening to the podcast, I would love it if you rated and left a review, and especially if you shared it with a friend. I don't think you all realize how helpful and encouraging it is when you share about It's Not Rocket Science and the Secondary Science Simplified podcast with your teacher friends. Like, it's so encouraging to me when I hear someone say, oh, my coworker said I had to check you out, or my teacher friend in a different state sent me your podcast. And I just, nothing brings me more joy. So please, please, please share with a friend so they can be a part of our little community over here too. And also last thing, stay tuned because next week is Teacher Appreciation Week. And I have a special little themed episode that I think you're going to laugh at a lot and really enjoy. So I'll see you next week. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.